The beginning?
The beginning.
Yeah.
In the beginning, there was light. What we need is a sound engineer. What we really need is someone who can come in and, like, do make sure all the levels on everything we do is perfect, because I'm clearly not up to that task. And then really, really quickly, like overnight maybe, lay in some nice beds. So when you said at the beginning, then there'd be like a thrumming or like boom, 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 boom. That's actually MC 900 Foot Jesus. Shall we start?
Yeah, it's a bit like the elf and the shoemakers, isn't it?
What? That bomb, bomb?
No, the shoemaker and the elves. There wasn't like one elf and lots of shoemakers in that story. Although, of course, the elves were shoemakers.
Is this a staple story in the Gilly household? You may need to explain it to me.
No, our main staples involve big bad wolves mainly.
You're trying to basically scare her straight.
Yeah, it's quite funny. We've got books.
I mean straight as in well behaved. I don't mean straight as in not gay.
No. I don't see that word as being like a gender normative word. I understand it in its literal sense. We have a special bookcase now for the scary books, in inverted commas. Scary books in our household include, but are not limited to, Three Little Pigs, Little Red Riding Hood, and Is That You, Wolf?
Oh, that's very wolfy stuff.
It's the wolf books she seems to fear the most.
But doesn't the wolf represent the primal coming of age of a young woman?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, she fears her impending womanhood.
Right. Okay, well, that's worrying. In our house, we really made a real, real concerted effort and push for Guess How Much I Love You, the one with nut brown hair.
Oh, no, we read that occasionally too, yeah, but I can't say the word nut brown hair without laughing.
That was his nighttime story for the longest time before he went to bed. And then we realised that by making the very last thing that happens his milk, before he goes to sleep, the story was a little bit, it kind of kept going by the wayside a little bit. And also the copy that we've got, the best copy that we've got, doesn't have, when he was very small, it was okay because it's got pages. But now it's got pages made of paper. But now that he's more grabby, it's not really solid enough.
Yeah, don't let him near a comic, because when Scarlett was a little bit older than Noah is now, she ripped the shit out of my copy of Tintin and the Calculus Affair.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. I mean, yeah. I don't really like letting him near stuff. Any stuff that might be breakable. He's throwing things a lot, but that's another story which we might get to. I'm talking about books right now. At the moment, we still love Guess How Much I Love You, although it is a little bit disarming for me, because another thing that I learned while reading it is that my capacity for memorizing stuff is really bad, because my wife had memorized it after about a week of reading it to him as a newborn baby. I still haven't quite got the hang of it.
No, mind. I tell you, we ask for listener feedback from time to time. I'd be interested if there are any like fixed voices people do for story time with their kids. Three Little Pigs, for some reason, I always do a strange Birmingham accent.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, when I'm going to sit back for this, their mum asks them to leave. You're going to have to go off and find houses of your own. And the three little pigs go, I'm going to build a house out of sticks. That will make a very fine house. I can't help myself. Every time I read it, that's the voice I adopt for the pigs.
Oh, okay. I like that, though.
Yeah.
I was told very early on that I wasn't allowed to change the voices up. I was supposed to stick to the same voice for Nut Brown Hair and
it wrong. Little Nut Brown Hair and Big Nut Brown Hair, which is why I find it so funny, because one of them is Little Nut, but it's Big Nuts Brown Hair, isn't it? I can't help myself.
Yeah, okay, sorry, Little and Big Nuts. I wasn't allowed to change up the voices, which is probably just as well, because you're supposed to make things consistent.
Well, they're Australian, aren't they?
Are they? Sometimes I maybe went a little bit blaxploitation with Big Nut Brown Hair.
Oh, wow.
And that, and so I think it's just as well that I was told I wasn't allowed to do it. But I can never, I can't remember. They're at like, it's really straightforward, and I can't remember most of the words. And this week, what's come up as well is, it doesn't matter how many times I hear the main song from Frozen. Have I talked about this on the show before?
Conceal, don't feel.
The line, it's my, I think it's everybody's favourite line, where she's saying, let it go, let it go. Da-na-na-na-na. And then she sort of turns her back and then she goes, the snow never really bothered me anyway. It's
the cold never bothered me anyway.
So I'm still getting it wrong then.
Yes.
Okay. Apparently this is like a running joke in our house. I say apparently it is a completely running joke. I just can't remember words to things.
We call it when it's songs. There's a name for it in our household. If you're singing along to songs and you're getting the words slightly wrong, Nicola calls it mummy-okey.
Ah.
Because my mother is the main exponent in our family for just not knowing any words, but still trying to half sing along. So we call it mummy-okey.
I think I do it worse than Amy. Well, no, I know I do, because one of the things she can do is remembering words, and I just can't.
Young, isn't she?
Yes, and she gets a bit frustrated listening to music that she doesn't know the words to.
Mm.
Her brain's still plastic enough.
It's funny, isn't it? She's young enough to still remember words, but old enough to have shut that door on new music.
Yeah, I love
that.
Yeah, it's a magical time.
It is. It's beautiful.
It's a magical time in a young woman's life.
It's a great age. You're very lucky.
We were away for the whole weekend, and it was very hot. We went to Horsham, and it was quite a hot weekend anyway. We went to Horsham to see some friends, and so he was really good, even though he's coming down with a cold. He's got quite a bad cold at the moment, but he was still really well-behaved and still really slept, and it was an hour and a half drive, and he was okay, if a bit hot and bothered, in the car. It was the first time we've thought, well, it's a bit hot, let's just put him in his clothes, let's not put him in a vest top, let's just have him in a shirt with trousers. And so his little tummy kept being on display, which was very cute. He loved the cats. He absolutely loves cats as much as he loves dogs, I think. But he was just, and he's getting really good at not quite walking, but he's learning that he can move his feet when he's standing on them, which has been a problem. He's struggling to learn that one, but he's starting to learn it. But one thing that happened, both Amy and I had, oh my God, we're awful parents moments.
Mm.
Mine still kind of bothers me, because he doesn't really complain very much. And so we were getting in the car, and I think it was quite a hot car. We were getting in the car, I think, to go somewhere on Sunday or maybe even to go home. And I was holding him while trying to sort out his chair in the car. And it took me a few seconds to realize that you become very conscious of your own body. And so if you're pushing against something unyielding, you'll normally be able to tell because your arm's leaning against it or something. But I was trying to do here to put him to sort out his car seat while holding him face out, and like the very top of his forehead, not with any sort of pressure, but the very top of his forehead was pressed right against the inside of the car door. And it took me a few seconds. Like, literally, I think I registered it almost as soon as it happened. And he didn't seem to notice at all. But there was this little red mark on his head, and I was so upset.
I've had scarlet on my shoulders before now, and there have been it was a head-to-boot incident where the boot was up. The guilt is just...
The
car, it was up. Because the first instinct is, oh, shit, I've done it. I've broken the baby. I didn't. She wasn't really a baby anyway. She was a toddler, but I hadn't broken her.
I think the other story, very, very quickly, was I got home the other day. I think it was after the other podcast we record. And it's called Momcast. I don't know why. I'm not being secretive about it or anything.
Shh.
But
don't tell.
I got home and my wife was in a little bit of a state. She was kind of okay, but she was in a little bit of a state. It was after Noah had gone to bed, but only just. Because while she'd been getting his bath ready upstairs, he started rolling, but he's still, you can normally just leave him in the middle of the room and he's okay. She, at one, at the way our house works, you go, in case you're trying to burgle it or something or want to murder us, you go through the front door, you go all the way to the back to get to the stairs. It's this little spiral staircase, and you go upstairs. It's not spiral, that's ridiculous. You go upstairs.
It's a twister, though.
Yeah, and then you have to come all the way down to the front of the house to get to get to the bedrooms.
It's a lot of exercise.
And Noah's in the front. So he's basically in the furthest point from the front door, and she was in the bathroom, which is at the back. So you'd have to go past her to get to that room. She was in the bathroom, and she was in there for a couple of minutes sorting out his bath, and then she went back into his room, and she couldn't find him anywhere. And so she looked all around. She looked in his cot. I mean, it's not that there's not loads of space, but she was looking all around the room. She looked out the corridor because that might have been where he went. She was starting to panic that he might have got to the stairs. And she was thinking, has Nick maybe got home early and is hiding him? Or no, he wouldn't do that because he knows that would be really mean. And has someone come in and taken him? Oh, my God, has he been kidnapped? And she was like looking around the room and apparently getting quite upset. We've got a futon sofa thing. And I'm really glad that when stressed out, she didn't sit down, actually. He'd seen one of his toys under the futon. So he just rolled under there.
Brilliant.
The whole time she was panicking in the room. And there's like a – it's got like a cover that, you know, he went under the curtain. The whole time she was running around panicking, he was just silently playing under the
– Brilliant.
Under the sofa, which was just – I mean, it's – You know, we can laugh about it now. Obviously, well, I could laugh about it since she told me, but obviously she was quite upset about it. And I tried not to lay it on too thick, but you know, I think we're going to put him in the cot now whenever we leave the room.
Good call.
Yeah. What's your lovely wife been doing this week, and your daughter?
I don't know.
Has anything been happening? Been doing anything interesting?
We had a lovely day in the garden yesterday. Scarlett's still being a bit clingy with her mum, which is a bit of a worry ahead of going to school. I had a weird one.
Is it next September she's going to school?
This September coming.
Oh, my goodness.
Nikki texts me on Thursday.
Is the table dusty, James?
Yes, it was, yeah.
He did a very exaggerated, he rubbed his finger along it and then very exaggeratedly, like, rubbed his fingers.
No, it had dirt on it. I actually had dirt on it. It's disgusting.
Dirty. Disgusting.
Yeah, I can't operate in this sort of environment. It's very stressful.
Squalor.
Very stressful to me. It's but Nikki texts me on Thursday, and as I said, she'd been a bit distressed. Scarlett's been brilliant. She's been in nursery since she's about 9 months old. Younger, in fact, and has always been used to it. But recently, Nikki's quit work and looks after Scarlett pretty much full time. But Scarlett still has 2 days in preschool to sort of get her used to the fact that she's going to have to do that permanently when she's at school. And also, it's good socialising, and it's educational as well. They learn things there.
That's what they say.
So it's all good. But she was really distressed on Tuesday and Wednesday, calling for Nikki and so forth. On Thursday, she was upset. She was at home with Nikki, but upset I wasn't there. So I had to phone home, and Scarlett picked up the call. So I had to phone up and have a conversation with Scarlett on the phone to find out how she'd been.
Apparently, that's ridiculously cute.
Apparently it cheered her up. She enjoyed it. But yeah, that's a bit. She's getting very clingy. She likes to tell us that she cried because she missed us.
Was she? Oh, well, that's passive aggressive.
Well, I'm not sure. I think she kind of enjoys the fact. Maybe it's an attention thing that she's enjoying the fact the way we react when she says she was upset not to be with us. Possibly. I don't know. I haven't really sort of.
Do you go? Oh, that's sweet. No.
I can't remember exactly. Is
the concern there might be positive reinforcement there?
Possibly. It's like, poor you, darling, and all that sort of thing. So we sort of try and comfort her. So maybe she's craving the comfort from, I don't know.
Okay. Well, that's something to be worried about now when Noah starts getting like that.
Well, there's almost nothing. I mean, you don't stop being worried at any point, I don't think, do you?
We've had one really successful trip to the childminders and one slightly more stressful for Amy one. Luckily, I haven't had to leave him there at any point and probably won't do.
He's never dead. I don't think there's any point where it's nice.
I think when they're teenagers, maybe.
Yeah, leaving them at the childminders when they're teenagers would be. I'd love to, when she's a teenager, take her to preschool. Go, there you go.
You can let them have their own key from about 8 or 9, can't you? And yeah, I think they'll let so, themselves yeah. in. It's yeah. fine. The subject of my memory came up earlier, I think.
Yes.
And there are two reasons that's pertinent. One is that we were supposed to be much more focused this week, and I have failed to make that happen. But the other is that what we are going to focus on now, I think this is probably the best segue ever.
Almost. It was almost perfect.
What we are going to talk about a little bit, because we wanted to talk a little bit about food, about feeding, weaning, really.
Yeah.
And we got some feedback from a listener of the show. One thing that James and I have said is, although this show has probably the smallest audience of any of the podcasts I'm involved in and that he's involved in, we get a much higher signal to noise ratio from people giving us feedback sure. and talking to us online from this than anything else we do, which is just lovely. The person who sent in long email to us opened it with a gambit where they dissed my memory for names of songs, TV shows or actors I like, following it up by saying that seemed too mean to make that joke, so they weren't going to. But, you know, they still wrote it, and so I didn't read the rest of it because I was outraged.
It's a bit mean of you. I was going to write over that. I was going to gloss over that bit and claim that the beginning of the email was just them telling us how much they enjoyed the show.
I just want to, because, I mean, you know, I don't take this stuff personally or anything, but I just want to set the record straight. Normally, my memory for the three things mentioned, songs, TV shows or actors, it's normally not too bad. It's just I'm remembering a lot of them, so my hit rate's pretty good.
It's quite a high-pressure situation you're in here as well, isn't it? I mean, we're naked, I'm holding a gun to your head most of the show.
Maybe this guy should try podcasting under those conditions.
Well, we can name him. It's Matt Farr of the excellent Dissecting Worlds podcast.
Oh, is that who does it?
Which can be found on the Geek Syndicate Network.
Is that who sent this email?
Yeah.
Oh, so all that stuff I just said about podcasting was a bit embarrassing.
Yeah, a little bit.
I don't know. Yeah, my memory's getting worse, I suppose. I like to think of myself as someone who can still, recite IMDb thingies, because I used to be really, really good at that sort of thing. I can't remember people's names real people's names.
When you're a young man, you mean?
So what did Matt say then?
Okay, so Matt, you mentioned last week, and I think on Facebook, about baby-led weaning, which, if you're not aware of what baby-led weaning is, it is a process that was written. There's a popular book written by Jill Rapley, I think came out around about 2003, 2004, but it's gained popularity recently, whereby she suggests that rather than feeding your child purees from about 3 or 4 months when weaning traditionally starts, that you wait until they're about 6 months when they've got control of their trunk. Control, that's the main part of their body, rather. Yeah. It's not about
feeding. They don't really
feeding,
have a trunk. That would be weird.
It's not about feeding baby elephants and their head. And rather than having specific pureed foods for them, you give them little bits of your food to eat, and they start eating it in their own time.
It is worth clarifying at this point, because I know a couple of people who do listen to the show don't have children and might be in some small way preparing themselves for the future when they might by listening to us, that no, small children, it's like, because I know you've noticed, you've seen small children around and they don't have trunks. Okay.
Yeah, they don't.
So I know you think that, but they don't. It's not like something that they sprout when they're around with their parents. James did mean, as he clarified, their upper body.
Also,
it might be worth going out meeting some people with actual babies rather than getting most of your prep from us, because that's just disastrous.
Oh yeah, we're making out as we go along. So,
I did not realise that A, it was such a recent thing, and B, that it was kind of a written like, because I've heard baby led weaning BLW.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen the acronym around, and that's obviously the term we used. But I just assumed it was like a quite a common usage term. I didn't realise it was such a recently term.
And anyway, this is what Matt said to us, and I'll read the email.
Mm-hmm.
One of my constant frustrations about being a parent is the running culture war that seems to surround a lot of decisions you're expected to make very early in the process. I mean, it starts before birth, with what your partner is allowed to eat, and then on to birth itself. And then you have the invasion of the breast fascists, and before you know it, you're doing it wrong before you've even got started. There seems to be this hugely heated debate about the first couple of years of a child's life, mostly focused on what women do, which seems hugely unfair and drawn from across the political spectrum, and then by the time they get to about 4 or 5, it all seems to die away. I guess that by that point, either you're the right sort of parent or you're not, according to people who commission websites and newspapers. Weaning seems to have become another one of those battlegrounds with the rise of baby-led weaning, which is essentially a clever way of selling books by repackaging what a lot of parents do anyway. When we had Ewan, who's now 12, the advice we got was wait until he's about 4 to 5 months and showing an interest in what you're eating, and then start to offer him a combination of stuff he can play with himself and spoon-fed mush to get him used to digesting heavier stuff and some different flavours. By the time we had Robert, now 4, there had emerged Athena-like, a whole armoury of books, articles and techniques about the correct foods, the correct orders, the whole BLW thing and everything else. Regardless, we did the same thing with him as his big brother and it seemed to work out fine. The big problem I have with BLW, aside from it's a didactic one-size-fits-all parenting technique, is that it fires to the heart of one of the battles over modern middle-class motherhood. It's pretty time and labour intensive on the face of it, and like a lot of similar parenting guff, really requires a lot more time from a parent to do properly. It seems odd to me that so much parenting advice these days seems to talk about empowering women to be in control of parenting, whilst at the same time telling them the correct way is to basically subordinate themselves to their children for 2 to 3 years and load up on that tasty parental guilt.
I'm reading along.
The fact that doing something that is inherently a natural process for your baby growing up, like walking or talking or toilet training, which have similar fatty issues around them, can end up being a source of anxiety is bonkers. Yes, I'm sure some kids have problems and I've known ones within our family that do, but generally speaking, something that is pretty straightforward, and if you follow your kid's pace, you probably can't go too far wrong. Certainly, if you're anxious about it, they'll pick up on that, and food will be an anxious time. If it's just doing what their parents are doing, and at the time they're doing it, they should just pick it up as normal, everyday thing.
As a normal everyday thing.
Yeah, that's what I said, isn't it?
As normal everyday. You just missed a couple of words.
That's all right, yeah.
Did we have permission from him to read out all of it?
We do. I can share that email if you like.
Okay,
I actually sought permission of the person who... generated that email.
Okay, cool.
It's almost like I know what I'm doing. No, I read that all in one go, first time. I don't know what you're talking about, Nick. Do you know what makes me feel really bad about that? Because it took me a couple of goes to get that right. The amount of times I sit there judging people on the TV, shouting, it's only reading out loud. It's hard reading out loud.
Yeah, but I'm quite a pressured audience. I'm quite a pressured... I'm a tough audience, aren't I?
You are, yeah, you are.
And you must have been expecting me to cut in and interject a lot more than I did.
Yeah, you didn't at all. I was quite surprised.
I would normally have, but you seem to be struggling quite a lot. So, now, this does confirm our bias a little bit and fit into the way we think, I think, both of us. James and I don't think exactly the same way.
It's incredibly close to how I think.
Yeah. But it is very much. We weren't under as much pressure about the breastfeeding thing. There was a lot of it at the NCT group, but because we tried and it just wasn't happening. And I think we were quite lucky with the particular midwives who were on duty at the times that we were in there, and we got extra help as well because Noah was in with this is where the memory jaundice. Because Noah was in the hospital with jaundice, Amy got a bit of extra help there as well. So we didn't feel that pressure too much. We got a lot of support, but it wasn't really particularly negative. But I know that it is there. You kind of felt it with the NCT group. But Amy's made most of the feeding decisions, and they've just made kind of sense to me. And we did try baby-led weaning, but as much as anything else, that was about it being fun for him. He had sort of because normally you give them fun foods, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
It's like fun foods that they can hold in their hand when they've got motor skills. And he's not like the walking and everything. He's a little bit and crawling. He's not really bothered with. He's quite lazy. He's a bit like but Amy and I in that regard. But in terms of motor skills, like with his hands, he's been very good with them since quite early on. And we had to kind of stop the baby-led weaning because you give them like bits of pepper or little bits of carrot and stuff like that. And he was kind of so good at just cramming the whole thing in his mouth that there was some fear of him potentially choking. And also, as Matt suggested there, but I'd never thought of it quite as, it's something that only middle class people really have the time to do. But there's a truth there to that. It takes fucking ages
for
them to eat anything.
Yeah.
And it's like where we were concerned about him keeping Noah's weight up and him not getting frustrated and tired while he was eating. It was just like, well, okay, he can eat sandwiches, but which apparently I can't pronounce properly. But otherwise, it's just easier to give him food to feed him ourselves. We're all happier with that. It just makes more sense.
It's funny you mentioned the choking thing because I read up a little, because I really wasn't aware about baby-led weaning, to be perfectly honest with you. And very much like you, Nicola made the major decisions and led Scarlett's weaning. Funnily enough, actually, we had Nicola and I had a discussion over the weekend because I knew we were going to talk about this today. And we were trying to remember what the weaning process was like, and we couldn't remember. I'm pretty sure it was a combination of little bits of food to pick at, so a little bit of baby-led weaning in terms of having food to touch, but then purees.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest with you, some of those purees, especially after Nikki went back to work, a lot of those purees were store-bought purees because, to be honest with you, Nikki was working very long hours at the time. She was generally getting home quite late. She had quite a long commute. So there was only myself to look after Scarlett and do whatever was needed. Also, I think she was working a second job, actually, at the time as well, if I remember. She will put me right, I've no doubt, but we didn't have very much time. So there's also the guilt of having the store-bought food, right? Because our diet was awful at the time. We'd have a takeaway if we had time or something to put in the microwave quite late. But that was kind of how we were eating in Scarlett's first year. It was.
I remember.
Yeah, we kind of. And now I'm desperately trying to lose the weight that I packed on during that time. But, there is an awful lot of stress and an awful lot of hassle. We couldn't really remember, though, what the process was for ourselves. It was
I think the thing is as well, that period went so quickly for us, and most of it happened while I was at work. So I didn't see most of it happening because it was mainly around lunchtime anyway, or he was eating his... Because the way Noah's schedule goes, because he was bottle-fed... And I think Scarlett was as well, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was, yeah.
So we had much more of a routine than I think a lot of people do.
Mm-hmm.
And it was easier to get him to sleep through the night. In Noah's case, it was easier to get him to sleep through the night.
Anecdotally, because I haven't got the time to do a proper scientific test on this, it does seem like bottle-fed babies do seem to sleep through the night better, and it's that being able to measure how much milk
they've
had.
It's easier to make sure they've had enough, and it's easier for them to drink enough as well.
That's right, because breasts tend not to come with calibrations on the side to show you.
Maybe they should, though.
Maybe they should. Intelligent design, my foot.
I mean, I know when I'm empty. Actually, breastfeeding. I know that we're not talking about breastfeeding this week, but that was one area of the NCT stuff that I just realised all of this stuff was going on right in front of me. All of this science and biology was going on right in front of me, and I genuinely had no idea how it worked.
No.
Like, it's really, really strange. Women are like aliens, and men are like aliens too. I feel like people are like aliens.
Malians and Walians.
And Walians.
There's a book. There's a bloody book.
Malians are from Mars. Walians are from Venus.
Absolutely.
But so it was a little bit easier to have a sort of a proper schedule. How do we say it?
How do you say it?
Schedule.
I'm having that. That's fine.
Yeah, so that was all a lot easier. And actually, I say about choking, we only really started worrying about Noah in that regard properly when he got quite ill, had quite a bad cold and was actually sick a couple of times, because he was never a sickie baby. And he was quite good at, if he started to retch on something, he was quite good at getting it back up. Apparently, well, they are quite good at it.
Well, they are. And reading the advice on the baby-led weaning website, apparently the reason that 6 months was chosen, so obviously because they have control, they're stable, they've got control of their head and their torso, but also it goes to great lengths to say, well, actually, you know, the body has a defense against that, and often children, when they sound like they're choking, are just gagging,
yeah,
and it's the body bringing it out. I mean, apparently there's quite a lot of research and the research that went into the original theory. I think it was a postgrad degree thesis that that Jill Rapley originally came up with a theory for.
I'll cut the sound of you checking on a piece of paper out.
Thank you, that's good of you. So, I mean, there would appear to be some decent science behind it.
It kind of, as the email does sort of suggest, it makes sense. It kind of makes sense to me anyway that you'd at least try to let at the beginning, what Matt says is that it's another way to sell books that suggests to people that they're going to do exactly what they are going to do anyway.
I feel I really need to clarify. Sorry, when I said there's a lot of science in terms of the safety aspect.
Yeah,
of it.
And the safety aspect, not the whole.
No, that we haven't had long enough. Mm-hmm. The theory hasn't been around long enough for us to know its efficacy as children mature and reach adulthood.
And who can pay attention anyway?
Exactly.
So much other stuff screws them up by the time. That was kind of part of my issue with the article we talked about a couple of weeks ago. It's really difficult. And again, the exact same thing that Matt taps into here. It seems that the only thing we can be absolutely certain it's effective at, all of this stuff is effective at, is that it makes parents who care about this stuff stressed out and feeling like there's a mark that they have to hit, and if they don't hit it, they're somehow failing. And the parents who don't care, who aren't going to be caring, who aren't going to be nurturing their kids, aren't going to be reading this stuff and caring about it anyway, probably. Yeah. So it's sort of weird. And I mean, not to derail us, but that's kind of the underlying thing that I seem to think is that if you have parents who care about you learning about consent when you're a child, then you'll pick it up. You don't need any of the other stuff.
Yeah, no.
You've got parents who will instill values in you. And I mean, I guess that. But the thing about the food thing. I suppose you probably did a mix, don't you? Because you start out, they're getting their milk to stock them up with stuff. But then at the same time, you're giving them the little finger foods for them to play with. But normally you're kind of filling them up with yogurt or something.
I think
on
some
top of
pasty
that
food
as well
goes in slightly before the solid anyway, doesn't it? It's sort of, if I remember rightly, solids didn't really start until 7 or 8 months. She started having. The thing is, I think as a parent, there's so much advice out there. You are naturally going to pick and mix what you do. I know Nikki had, and I forget the name of the book she had, but she had one particular book that she would constantly go back and refer to. And I think it's a matter of you find literature that you trust, you find voices that you trust.
Mm-hmm.
There was one thing around feeding that we were really fastidious about, and we continue to this day to be really careful about, and that's like cleanliness.
I was going
to
ask you about this because you, I picked. Mm. We talked about this after the show a few weeks ago, and it's basically been on. It's something I adhere to. We kind of, Amy kind of did it anyway, but now I think about it quite clearly when we're doing it. So sorry, carry on.
So Nicola had read that one way that you can help kids not to have food hang-ups is to not constantly wipe their face and wipe their hands while they're eating. Let them eat, and then you clean up after they've eaten. Mm-hmm. Now, that really chimed. When we looked into the theorising behind that, we know that my mother... This is where it all gets a bit Freudian, mm-hmm. but we know that my mother, her instinct is to, because we watched her with Skull at that age, her instinct is to go in, wipe the face, wipe the hands, wipe the face, wipe the hands. I have a very odd relationship with food. I eat very quickly and then I have to wash up. Mm-hmm. I can't eat dirty food. I can't eat like ribs. I don't like ribs because I don't like to get the crap all over my hands. Mm-hmm. I have to have clean hands. Like I have a packet of crisps every day. I'm a fat man, so I have more often than not, I have a packet of crisps with me pita breads at work. Pretty much as soon as I've eaten, I want to wash my hands. I need the smell of the food off of my hands. And, you know, I think that's given me, some of that stuff seems to give me a really complicated relationship with food. Ultimately, you know, as along with other things, has led to me being obese. Mm-hmm. So it was weird. It's because that's an issue for me. That really chimed with us, because one of my fears is I'm big, Nikki's big as well. One of my fears for Scarlett is she'd be big. I don't want her to be. It's not comfortable. It doesn't make you feel good at all. So I worry that it's, you know, I'm really wary about being a role model as far as that's concerned. But yeah, sort of things to make, techniques to make sure she isn't faddy about food were really important to us. Mm-hmm. So, and I think that's the, you know, it's basically you're probably going to let the things that fuck you up guide you as far as being a parent is concerned, I guess.
I mean, my main mission is to make sure that Noah doesn't have the same weird thing about sweet and sour foods that Amy does. Mm. But as long as he doesn't turn out like the really fussy people, that fussy eaters that we know.
Hi.
But you see, we've talked about this. You are actually not that fussy compared to some of the people I'm talking about.
Oh, fair enough.
And in those cases, it's not even about the sort of thing you're talking about. It's about, I'm pretty sure it's about their mums. The minute the child started resisting eating certain things, going, oh, well, it's important that you eat and I want you to have what you want. So, okay, if you want peas and chips every day, if that's what it takes to get you to eat, I'll give you that. And it's like, well, that's why these are now full-grown adults and they just are still eating basically children food. That's why. Yeah. It's like fish fingers and orange food, I call them.
Yeah.
We
call it a brown dinner.
Yeah.
In our household.
My brother-in-law, who is perfectly capable of eating pretty much anything, didn't eat peas until very recently. Not because he didn't like them, but because he decided he didn't like them.
Yeah.
And all it really took was being at a work dinner and not wanting to look fussy in front of the men he worked with. And that's actually opened his, like, broadened his food horizons completely in his, like, probably late 20s, early 30s. Is peer pressure from other people is making him try all of these things that he'd deliberately avoided. And, like, he went from living in a house where his mum made him whatever he wanted to eat to living with a wife who did roughly the same thing. And because, you know, I don't blame people for making the easy decision, but it's kind of, there is a knock-on effect, and the knock-on effect is that bad habits end up getting reinforced, don't they?
Today, peas, tomorrow, the world.
Well, yes. But, I mean, I don't have a good relationship with food either, but I don't know where I think that's more likely to have come from my teens, because that's when things kind of got a little bit weird, when there wasn't any money around, and so now I think that part of my weirdness and part of my binge eating and stuff comes from there being times when I didn't have very much food myself. But otherwise, I think I've got quite a healthy relationship. I really don't want, I don't want us to worry about this stuff all the time with Noah. But yeah, you saying that really, I thought that was your wisdom that you'd worked out for yourself about the not wiping their faces all the time.
It was, we discovered it. I mean, there are lots of different techniques. My brother-in-law once told me a rather hilarious tale. He was told by an interesting individual he met dog walking once with one of their, I think their youngest, when he wasn't very old, who claimed that she had been liquidising high calorific value meals for her son since he was basically a child, a baby in arms. Mm-hmm. Kind of hadn't bothered with milk at all. And apparently he was something like 6'7" and 30 stone. So my brother-in-law claims this is true, but I rather like the idea of this crazy woman liquidising fish and chips to feed to a very, very small baby. I find it a comical yet tragic image, but you can grow this massive human being.
It's like, putting him in fertilizer. It's not really.
It is. It's almost. Yeah. It's like hydroponic children.
We had because I think I mean it's early days for Noah yet, but I think both of our kids are probably turning out quite well food wise and size wise and everything.
Yeah, Scarlett's sort of okay. She's tall. Give it a.
Well, you're quite tall, so.
Yes.
And. Noah started out quite small, but he's in the higher percentile now, I think. He's caught up, definitely. But we didn't feed them the same stuff. Because Amy was quite careful with her diet. She didn't drink. She avoided the cheeses and stuff like that. Just, I think, because I don't think she felt that much societal pressure. It's just that she was like, well, why wouldn't I? If there's any chance that eating this stuff is going to be bad for the baby, I might as well not eat it. It didn't cost her anything. Mm-hmm. Wine, I think she struggled with a little bit. But like, but in terms of food, we've been really careful not to include extra salt in anything that Noah has. But otherwise, he has been eating what we have. And that's the only thing that I'd say about shop-bought puree that you might run the risk of missing out on. Is because, as you said, you give them the deal is you feed them when you get fed as much as possible, and you give them what you'd eat so they get used to that. And maybe your issues were that you weren't eating particularly great stuff, so the shop bought stuff was the best option, really. The only thing I think is that the shop bought puree tends to be quite severely pureed, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely,
it's basically gunk. Yeah. It's really tasty though.
Can be.
Good enough for RoboCop.
That's right. Although I have to say,
the proper RoboCop. I
remember there was one spaghetti bolognese that was particularly nice.
Yeah.
And these days they sort of they're graded, so you get the mush and then they get lumpier as the kid gets older.
And that's the only thing that I think it makes sense to me that there'd be a benefit there is that he's seeing the different parts of food. Like, he's not just getting, he doesn't just get a mush, he gets kind of, I keep wanting to say peas.
See, it's quite interesting though, you're talking about this, and it's almost like this is one of the middle class battlegrounds.
Well, I don't.
In terms of, if you're doing it right, you cook your own.
No,
I don't think that's your attitude.
He eats a lot. He eats leftovers a lot of the time.
But it feels to me like the received wisdom now is, if you're doing it right, you're eating a good diet. Because, you know, the sign of a good middle class family now is you're all eating well. It's not, you know, but I think in terms of the ideal as maybe broadcast media maybe would have it. But I didn't realise until I had this discussion with Nikki at the weekend that we used to have to, the first nursery that Scarlett went to, we had to provide the food.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have their own facilities for cooking the food. I didn't realise that she felt guilty that we were putting decanting shop-bought purees and stuff in there. I had no idea that Nikki felt bad about that until I spoke to her the other day, and it's like, well, that's frigging ridiculous. We're not sending rat poison in with her, you know. It's perfectly edible, nutritious food, you know.
See, maybe the reason you're reacting to what I said like that is because I feel like guilt is silly in most cases.
Of course it is. But I think the guilt comes from the fear of being judged, and you don't. Sorry, you. I'm saying you, and I mean me or we. The fear there was people would judge us and think us poor parents. And this is the whole thing about you're making it up as you go along. And I guess I had always had the fear, and I think maybe Nikki too, is you don't want people to think that you're making it up wrong, that your decisions, your choices, your way of bringing up a kid. Because I know, like, you know, when I see someone pushing a pram along and they're smoking a cigarette over it, I judge that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I do as well. But I don't know if that's middle class or just I've never really liked smoking.
Well, no, even when I was a smoker, I tried to keep scarlet and cigarettes as separate as I possibly could. You know, that was a personal choice. But I know I will judge people who I see doing things that I don't think are really appropriate for their kids. So that in itself, because I am judgmental, I fear being judged.
See, that kind of taps into what the email says about pressure. But when I talk about it making sense to me about, like, you do what you, maybe because I don't feel that pressure that much. I know Amy felt a little bit of pressure. The pressure that she felt around the NTT people and other parents was about the breastfeeding.
Oh, I would definitely say the majority of the pressure still falls on the shoulders of the woman.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because society has such low expectations for fathers.
Yeah, yes. But my point is, when I say that it makes sense to me, if the child can see that they're eating different, like, separate things, that makes sense, that there's the knock-on effect that it's probably healthier for their relationship with food. That isn't coming from my background or anything. It's just coming from, like, me thinking that generally people have a healthier attitude to food when they've got more of a sense of what the food is made of and what the parts of it are.
Sure.
The fact that not everyone can do that...
Yeah.
The fact that not everyone can do that, I don't judge at all. I think that for reasons of time, like, for example, and I understand you're going to feel guilty however you feel, but I might judge you if I thought that the reason you had the diet you had at the time and the reason you were feeding... the decisions you were making for Scarlett were entirely based around the fact that you were both lazy. Like, you were both home all the time. You had plenty of time to do everything. And you might counter that with saying, well, you know, we could have made more of an effort, and maybe you could have, but the truth is you had dysfunctional relationships with food yourself as well. So actually you couldn't have. You had to kind of work out your stuff. So actually it wasn't like you weren't trying to do the best you could for your daughter. So you don't have to feel – I'm talking from a point of privilege here because I may be a sociopath. So there are lots of things I care about what people think of me, but that isn't one of them because I know that Amy and I are doing the best we can, and maybe we could be, like, taking him – there are times when we think we could be taking him swimming all the time because it goes months at a time and we think – I think he'd quite like it, and it's probably quite good for them, but we don't because we're lazy, because we're lazy and because none of the places open on time, and there's loads of little things like that. Maybe we should have taken him to the zoo by now, or, like, I think Amy's taken him to a couple of things, but there are loads of things where you think you should be doing more. And, like, don't even get me started on not talking about children. I should absolutely feel guilty about how fucking little I walk my dogs. That's nothing to do with kids. That's a completely separate thing. Because that is literally about me not getting up half an hour earlier every morning and doing it. So I understand why you'd have that. Why it would. I am talking from a point of privilege. My wife happened to, of all of the different hobbies she could get, she got a little bit excited about trying out all of these recipes, and it was a thing that she could really get her teeth into. When she doesn't really, she didn't really like to cook before, and it happens that the things that she has got really preoccupied with are all things that'll help. And actually, in terms of how us eating healthy and him eating healthy goes, he eats much better food than me, because I'll be eating his food. I'll be feeding him his salmon stuff. He's got this salmon stuff. She uses full fat everything in his food.
Well, he doesn't have to watch his weight at his age, does he?
I'm not allowed to have more than, like, if she sees me sneaking spoonfuls of it, she points out how chunky I am.
Nice.
And she, I mean, I suppose she's probably right too, but I would devour a bowl of that. I'm not sure what my point is, really.
Maybe you should eat it and then come down the swimming pool with me for a swim.
And the truth is, I mean, it's still kind of puree-y, but there are bits in it and stuff.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I kind of, there are things that he's going to turn out with whatever attitude to food he has. And I think the whole point that Matt was getting at and that we've kind of been trying to get at is you can't get too obsessive about that stuff at this point, because you'll just spend all of your time feeling like you're not doing a good enough job.
I agree. And I have to say, in terms of our relationship with food, mm-hmm. I think we've turned the corner at the right time. We don't have takeaways anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Primarily, it's an economic issue, but once a month we go out. We've started going out for breakfast once a month, around payday now.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the only time that we do anything other than have predominantly home-cooked
mm-hmm.
home-cooked meals. And both Nikki and I both cook quite regularly now. Nikki, I hope she'll forgive me, say cooks an awful lot more often than she used to. I've always loved cooking. I've discussed my first job was as a chef, so I enjoy it anyway. I find it quite relaxing. So I think that Scarlett's at an age where she's aware of what's going on. We try and include her in cooking, mm-hmm. try and include her in baking. So I'm hoping all of that is giving her a really good attitude towards food, as opposed to and Nikki, and although they tend to eat at lunchtime, which I think is quite a good habit in terms of metabolizing your food, Nick, but they always eat at the table. They eat together. It's a social event for Nikki and Scarlett at the weekend. We always make sure we're up at the table. We have our meals at the table generally, you know.
My lunch is much more structured when I'm at home with Noah than it is when I'm at work. At work, I'm lucky if I even break pace on whatever I'm doing.
Sure.
And if I leave my desk, I'm kind of rushing anything that I do eat. Whereas at home, and I mean, the truth of it is, every lunchtime he has a ham sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we'll mix it up, but it's not sophisticated, you know what I mean? I just think, like, and the truth is that a lot of it comes down to how engaged you are with the child at meal times and stuff like that anyway. So it doesn't really – I think that of all of the things we've been talking about, the thing about not wiping their face every 5 seconds is going to have a much greater impact on how they feel about food than what the food is.
Yeah.
And like you said, they don't really start to – put together stuff logically until they're a little bit older anyway. So what they're eating when they're a baby kind of doesn't matter. It's just, for me, I kind of think about people who, I keep hearing this. I don't know if it's actually one of the most common foodie issues or if it just feels like it, but like the people who can't have stuff, people who can't have their food touching on the plate and so don't like beans or anything because it makes everything mushy and stuff like that. It feels like that sort of stuff that people don't even really have any control of probably starts to get in early, but it is going to be more about the attitude that you feed them with than how you actually feed them. And like you did and like we did and like I think Matt said he did, that you start, it doesn't really matter as long as you're receptive to what works best for the kid. So we started trying baby-led weaning. It took too long. He wasn't getting enough food. And so he was getting really good at playing in his high chair with food. That's what he was getting really good at.
Cool.
But it didn't work. It didn't work, and we didn't fret too hard about it. We just started doing something that did work.
And I personally think that's the key. Not the fret. Don't do things that are stressful for you and the kid. And I think all of these big things, you know, them walking, them eating, potty training, as long as you don't make it a stressful situation, then hopefully things will just happen naturally.
Yeah. Right? I think that's what I think.
Mm.
I think we both think it rationally.
I think so. Sometimes
I worry about how quickly he's walking and crawling and stuff like that. But you just have to not take it out on the kid.
I think that's natural as well. I absolutely did. Every day is sort of anxious. Are you developing the way you should? But generally, all being well, they do. So.
Barring head traumas.
Yes.
I probably shouldn't have
crunched
him against the car like that. Oh, well.
So thank you for the email, Matt.
Yeah, thank you, Matt. That was good. I'm sorry I gave you a load of lip at the beginning.
If you've got anything that I guess is a really pressing issue about your kids or raising children or whatever, we'd love to hear from you. And can't guarantee that we'll frame an episode around your email, but, you know, you never know.
Are you talking to me right now?
Maybe. No, I'm talking to listener.
Oh, okay, right. I for a few seconds there, I was actually really confused.
I've been a professional podcasting host. Hey, look, I tell you, I've got my first voiceover gig.
I know. Today. I don't think you should talk about it too much. You might jinx it.
That's true. I mean, it's unpaid, but I, you know.
Listener, if you want to keep track of what James is doing in his ongoing career as a voiceover actor, or if you
artist.
Want to artist, yeah, if you want to keep track of what James is up to, if you want to keep track of what I'm up to, if you want to send us an email, you can do that by sending us an email to
2GrownMenPodcast.
I'll put it in the show notes.
It is 2GrownMen.
I think
podcast.
It's 2GM podcast.
No, I don't think it is. Hold on, I've got it here.
James will just check. Meanwhile, while he's doing that, I will tell you that you can listen to. You can find the show notes for this episode, and you can listen to all of the past episodes and look at the show notes for them at the website. It's at 2GrownMen.net or 2GM.co. The show notes are generally extensive, and probably useful. If we say something and you find it interesting, there's probably a link to a Wikipedia or something on there.
I'd be prepared to say they're invaluable.
Oh, okay, good. Thank you. You can also leave comments for us there or at our Facebook page, which you can find probably quite easily if you are on Facebook. It's 2GrownMen on Facebook. Or send us an email at
2GMPodcast@gmail.com.
Or you can talk to me on Twitter at NickSight or James on Twitter.
James Momb, MOMB.
And we do really like to get your feedback about the show. And, you know, just like to talk about these subjects with you. It's good. James generally only shows up on Twitter when someone talks directly at him these days. It's quite cool.
Sorry.
No, it's good. But you're like right there the second someone starts talking. It's brilliant.
I drop the odd non sequitur. It's because I get the email alert.
Mm-hmm. There's also a mailing list. It's at tinyletter.com/2GM, I think. But I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. That comes out once a week. It's almost never timely. It's normally towards the end of the week. Sometimes there are recipes. Sometimes there's other stuff. Anything you want us to talk about or anything you think of while you're listening, we would be interested to hear it. And please do tell your friends about us. Not all of your friends. Some of them are going to think it's shit. But if you know anyone who's got a kid or whatever, or likes 90s music.
Yeah, or likes the witterings of two middle-aged men. Because let's face it, next week we might barely mention our kids at all.
That's a possibility. Thank you, James. This was brilliant.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
well, this is weird. I don't think I've ever really noticed those before. I just think maybe I've been testicle blind for all this time.
Well, what, do you know, there's one thing that we've discovered today, Nick. Mm. There's two things about you. Not one thing. You're forgetful and you're obsessed by nuts.
Well, the nuts thing, I think, is kind of your fault.
People say that penises are ugly. I disagree. I don't think penises are ugly. Ball sacks, though. Ball sacks are ugly. That's a nasty piece of design.
I used to think penises were very ugly. But now I wonder about, a really impressive one.
Mm.
I think flaccid penises are a bit weird.
Oh, no, of course they are.
Don't really see the point of them. But, an impressive specimen is impressive.
Can be quite breathtaking.
Yes.